radio show.
Fun within prescribed limits.
Broadcasting live from the Goggin Cold Hall Studios.
The government and parents everywhere, they tried to ban it.
This is the George Plaster Show.
He's a fine man.
He's a great broadcaster.
Brought to you by Bart Durham Injury Law. Call George now at 615-844-5600 and online at WNSR.com.
He's a very powerful guy.
And now, here's the man, the myth, the legend, George Plaster.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome into the show on what has turned out to be a nice, sunny, and sort of brisk Tuesday afternoon in Nashville, Tennessee. 45 degrees to be exact, but 58 tomorrow, 60 on Thursday, 57 on Friday. So it's not the worst. Let's check in very quickly. Up on the plateau, we talk with Coach Watson Brown, who joins us. Watson, how are you?
George, I'm doing fantastic. It's not sunny up here. We've got overcast skies, but I'm glad to hear the weatherman give us 3 good days coming up. I may have to go hit a golf ball one of those days. It's
yeah.
Been a while since I did that, so I may have to give that a shot.
What is your handicap?
Golf.
Yeah, well, that was the line I was going to use.
Yeah, that's golf.
Yeah. To be good, you got to play
a
bunch.
Better, George.
Yeah.
I haven't played a bunch. I want to. Now, you would think since I've retired, I would. But my favorite thing to do is to get up in the summer, spring, and go out early to the golf course and walk 9 holes. And just play by myself and walk. That's good exercise that way.
Yeah.
And I get plenty because the ball don't go straight, so I'm going
right.
Sideways enough to get plenty of yards and, you know, dodging limbs through trees. And so I get all the exercise that I need doing that.
You visit areas that not everybody visits.
I've got a great story playing at Augusta. Matter of fact, Hall Thompson is the one that took me down to Augusta, as you remember me.
Sure.
Took me to Augusta, and I was at UAB, I think, at the time. And I'm playing the par 3, which would be, what, 10, 11? That's 12. You don't know it, but there's a golf course on the top of that par 3 that's Augusta Country Club. I hit a ball all the way over the green up into the fairway of Augusta Country Club, and the caddy said, "Sir, I've been caddying here for 30 years. I've never seen a ball there in all my time." So I said, "Do you want me to jump that fence to go get it, or are you going to?" And he said, "It's on you, big boy. I'm not going after that one."
Oh, wow. That's funny.
So it was still laying there when we left the hole. I did not go after the ball. I'd have probably got hit in the head with another one coming at me.
Yeah.
But how about that story now?
That's a great one.
I've never seen a ball there in my 30 years of caddying here. I said, "Well, you need to bring me back then. I can put you in some places you've never seen before."
That is terrific.
That's a great story.
Terry, what's your best golf story?
My best golf story? Wow. There was one time that I didn't realize that I was teeing off on a par 3. And I didn't realize that the club head had somehow come loose on my 7-iron. And I tee off, and I hit the ball, and the club head went further than the ball did.
Oh, that's not good. Oh, wow. My Lord. Terry, that is sort of a once. That's a once-in-a-lifetime deal. Now, Watson has heard this story. Terry, I don't know if you have, but this is a true story. So over the years, my lack of golf proficiency has gotten out over the airwaves a lot. So I am on the 6th hole, I believe it is, at Harpeth Hills on this particular day before I'm going in to go on the air. And I hit a worm burner during a time of the year where we hadn't had a lot of rain, so the ball just kept going and kept going. And before you know it, it's 6 inches from the hole. It is really close to being a hole in one. It's a terrible shot. It's just a big worm burner that kept going. So I decide that we're going to have, at the start of the show, kind of a bulletin. Breaking news story. George comes within 6 inches of a hole in one. Of course, everybody's like, really? So I start explaining that, well, it's not quite what it seems to be. It was a poorly hit ball that just, because of the weather conditions, just kept going. So as I'm telling the story, I end up having a kidney stone attack. And by the time I get, I know what it is by then. I've had enough of them. I know what it is, and I know I'm in big trouble. I get us to the commercial break. I've broken out in a sweat. And Willie, and I'm leaving. And Willie goes, where are you going? And I said, where the hell do you think I'm going? I'm going to the hospital. I said, I'm having a kidney stone attack. You know, because you know it. You break out in a cold sweat. It's not real pretty. It's also the male equivalent of childbirth. It's bad stuff. But that is a true story. And so I probably will never again say, you know, I came close to a hole in one. Never going to happen again.
No, I'd say you won't pull that one again.
But it was true.
Unless it goes in the hole, you won't even bring it up if you get close.
There's right.
No doubt. Yeah. I don't blame you.
I've never had a hole in one, but I did, as part of a scramble, hit a shot at Hermitage in the Boots Donnelly Duffer. You remember Boots?
Oh, sure.
He used to have. I played in that one year, and I was playing some of the worst golf I'd ever played in my life, which is really saying something because, you know, I'm very mediocre, shall we say. And somehow or other, we had a guy on a par five that just crushed the drive, hit it over 300 yards probably. So we're 120 feet from the hole. And I whack away and all of a sudden hit just a miraculous shot. And it holed out from 120 yards, and we got a double eagle off of it.
That's quite good.
That was quite lucky.
Well, you know.
I think we might have used one more shot that I shot the rest of the day.
So,
I'm like some good golfers than this one.
Yeah. So I'm looking over across from me, and I have to ask the question, do we have anything approaching a breaking news sounder? Bulletin, bulletin.
Mm-hmm.
Could you play it right now?
Yeah, if I can find it.
Okay, that'll be good. Because we've got a little story that has just broken that might be a little bit surprising, Terry.
All right, go ahead.
Well, I can't go ahead. Just hold on here a second. This is, you know, technology being what it is, there's a little lag time. Okay, we're looking. Breaking news. Here we go. Let's see what we got. That was it? Okay, how would we grade that breaking news sounder?
F minus.
Okay, Terry.
I'd have to give it a 0.0 in the
fashion.
0.0.
Carolina fired Ron Rivera a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I did not think that was going to happen.
Nor if Turner becomes the special coach. Special assistant.
What does that mean?
I guess he's the head coach. And
well, okay, wouldn't he be the interim head coach?
You would think. That's what it says. It's special.
Special, okay, whatever.
Whatever.
Well, Norv Turner's been there before. Terry, I would think that Ron Rivera will not stay unemployed too long. I think he's got a pretty good reputation.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I'm a little surprised by this, given that he didn't have Cam Newton for the vast majority of this season. And, you know, to squeeze out what he squeezed out of this team, and I know they've struggled the last 2 or 3 weeks. You know, at one point, I think he had them at like 5-3 or something like that, which was, I thought, was pretty good considering that they were playing a backup quarterback and really had kind of a one-dimensional offense that was pretty much all built on Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah. I want to get you all into a little bit of discussion here for a minute about Kirk Cousins. Last night I watched very closely Seattle's victory 37-30 over Minnesota, and I know what the record states, that he's 0-4 forever on Monday Night Football. He's 0-8. There's always been sort of this he can't win the big one. But I'm starting to think some of this is unfair. I watched him last night. I thought he was pretty good. I thought his defense sucked.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think when you see that 0-8 record, the vast majority of that was performed with some pretty mediocre Washington Redskins teams. And I think the Viking defense last night let him down. And also, I think his receivers let him down. I know Stephon Diggs, you know, had a couple of balls, including the interception, that he should have had. And, you know, those are the type of things that, you know, sometimes you got to have your other people step up and make a play for your quarterback. I mean, I think Cousins has had a pretty good year, and I think it'll be interesting in Week 16. They play on Monday night again. They host the Green Bay Packers, and that very well could be for the NFC North crown. That may be a more telling situation for where Kirk Cousins is as far as his development and his ability to play in the clutch.
Watson, kind of give me your feelings on Kirk Cousins.
I think he's had a great year. I think he's played really, really well. And I think the criticism isn't fair, but at the same time, there's two people that are judged on W's and L's, and it's the head coach and the quarterback. They don't seem to judge anybody else on the team. But if you lose, the quarterback gets the L. And if you win, the quarterback gets the W. The rest of the team's just there. And that's an amazing stat. But he's also not been on some, you know, not had great players around him some of that time, too, now. So I thought he played good last night. I thought he played well enough last night to win that ball game.
Yeah, I just think I don't know. I think he's starting to get an unfair rap. And I kind of hope for him that somewhere in this he's able to knock this door down a little bit, because I'm starting to think it's a pile on a little bit. When I watched Minnesota last night, Seattle ran the ball at will, had over 200 yards rushing, and I thought it was their defense that got them beat a lot more than Kirk Cousins.
Oh, I agree. 100% agree. And they just outplayed them as a team last night, all the way around. And were y'all not surprised to see him run the ball that well on the Minnesota defense?
Shocked. Yeah. Absolutely shocked.
Yep.
Because I'll tell you what, if they're able to do that and take some more pressure off of Russell Wilson, Seattle's going to be a tough out.
Terry, I think they are a tough out already. I wouldn't want to mess with them.
No, I don't think anybody wants to face them in the playoffs. I mean, yeah. They are, you know, Russell Wilson is as clutch as it gets. And, you know, their defense is back to playing at a pretty high level, it seems like.
Well, and running the ball well, just everything. And you feel a confidence in that team, don't you? That's what I see when you watch them play. They stay on this even keel that we're going to win the game. We're going to win the game. Just everybody hang in there. We're going to win the game. That's what you feel when you take them on, and that's not a good thing you want to play in the playoffs.
Guys, let's do this. Let's go to our first break. When we come back, we're going to go over to Columbia, Missouri. We're going to talk with Gabe DeArmond, who covers University of Missouri athletics. As you know, they're in a coaching search. They fired Barry Odom on Saturday, which caught a lot of people by surprise. And we're going to ask, where is this search going? What's caused it? All that kind of stuff. So stick around. From the Goggin Cold Hall Studios, you're listening to WNSR, Nashville Sports Radio. My buddy James Warren is with me in studio. Class of 1977, Battleground Academy. He's the owner of Sir Speedy Music City. The name has changed, but let me tell you one thing that hasn't. They do great signage. If you don't believe them, go in and try it, right?
Absolutely, George. We love doing signage. That's a big part of our business. And if it has to do with trade show displays, banners, posters, directional signs, big signs on the side of your business, window decals, graphics, you see us all over town, and we love it.
Well, the bottom line is you want your company to look good. Now, give people phone number, website, that kind of stuff.
You can reach us at 615-832-9511. SirSpeedyMusicCity.com is our website. Print at SirSpeedyMusicCity.com gets you to it.
Bottom line is you want your company to look good. When you go in, tell them Plaz sent you.
Okay, let's say your business does $5,000, $20,000, $100,000 or more in monthly revenue. There are probably times when you need more cash flow to run your business, right? Right. If you're a business owner in this situation, you need to call the Merchant Cash Advance Line right now. We're not a bank and we don't have bank rules. We're a direct lender with the power to approve deals. We look at your business and we decide how much money to lend you, good credit or bad credit. If your business is solid, we can lend you up to $500,000. You can use the money for anything you think is right to run your business. If you need money and you don't want to deal with a bank, call now. Learn how easy it is to get up to $500,000 in as little as 2 to 3 days.
Call now. 800-452-4846. 800-452-4846. 800-452-4846. That's 800-452-4846.
Technology Truths, brought to you by GEICO.
Technology Truths.
Truth, you will certainly send any text about your supervisor to your supervisor.
What's with Janet's bangs? Did she lose a bet with a weed whacker? LOL. And sent. Wait, no.
Truth, it's so easy to switch and save on car insurance at GEICO.com.
Janet, I think my phone was hacked or something.
GEICO, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Blair, what about my medical bills?
They'll all be taken care of through the settlement.
What about me?
You worry about getting better. Do what your doctor tells you. We'll take care of the rest.
What a relief.
Mark Durham Injury Law, 615-242-9000.
Get all your NASCAR news every weekday right here on the Final Lap. Hey, it's Kerry Murphy, and it may be the offseason, but we get you through all the way to the Daytona 500 and beyond. This week is, of course, Champions Week, going down from Nashville, Tennessee, instead of Las Vegas this year. And we've also got tons of news coming from Denny Hamlin, Kyle Larson, Daniel Hemric. So grab all the latest NASCAR news, driver interviews, stats, and info every single weekday right here. And be sure to like us at Facebook.com/TheFinalLap. We'd appreciate it every single weekday right here.
This is the George Plaster Show. Call now, 844-5600 on WNSR Nashville Sports Radio.
.223 is the time as we welcome all of you back. As we promised, we're headed to Columbia, Missouri, where the University of Missouri is suddenly in a coaching search. Gabe DeArmond is the publisher of PowerMizzou.com, and he joins us by phone. Gabe, thank you for taking the time to do this.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. How are you?
Good, good. I know you're busy. Kind of tell me how all this started. Why was Barry Odom fired?
Well, to really explain that, we got to go back 4 years to when Gary Pinkel retired in November of 2015. And everybody knows, I think, by now what happened at Missouri with the player boycott and all that and all the issues that were on campus. So Missouri hired Barry Odom, quite honestly, because there was nobody else that was that really was going to take the job. I mean, the other people who would have taken the job were not better than hiring your own defensive coordinator, who was going to be a head coach at some point anyway. If he didn't get the Missouri job, he was getting the Memphis job. But the reason he got the job is what made the job pretty difficult. Missouri was in a tough spot there, and he rebuilt it a little bit. But 7 months after he took the job, because of that boycott and everything, Mack Rhodes, the athletic director, he was looking for the first ticket out of town as soon as that happened. And he found it, and he went to Baylor. And the worst thing that can happen to a football coach is that the guy who hired you leaves. And that's what happened. Jim Sterk came in. After everything I've learned over 3.5 years, I don't think Jim Sterk ever really believed Barry Odom was the guy. I think it was a rocky relationship. He was looking kind of for reasons to move on anyway. If he would have kept Barry Odom after this season at 6-6, Odom would have kind of by default become Jim Sterk's guy. And that wasn't anything that was going to happen. So this season gave him a reason. And I don't think it's unfair. I'm not trying to say Odom didn't deserve to be fired. They lost two more games last year than they should have. They were 8-5. They should have been at least 10-3. And then this year, they should have won 9 games this year. They went 6-6 and couldn't find the end zone for, you know, weeks at a time. So it's justifiable. But I think the real truth is just the relationship with the AD, who wasn't the one who hired him, is ultimately what led to it.
Was his biggest sin this year that Kelly Bryant was not what they hoped he would be?
I think that was a big part of it. You know, everybody just, like, we warned people, hey, Kelly's he's a solid quarterback. I'd say he's an above-average college quarterback. But you're not getting Deshaun Watson, and you're not getting Trevor Lawrence. What you're getting is the worst Clemson quarterback in the last 5 years. Now, that's a high bar. There's no shame in that. But you're not getting this guy that is a national championship quarterback on his own, right? And when he didn't have the pieces around him, yeah, that was that he did at Clemson, that was part of the problem. Another part of the problem was 2 years ago when Josh Heupel left, Barry Odom hired Derek Dooley as the offensive coordinator. And everybody immediately said, well, that's interesting, was the nicest way I think it was described. And Frank, he was pretty good in year one because he came in and he basically kept a lot of what Josh Heupel did. And he had Drew Locke, a second-round NFL quarterback who most people thought was a first-round talent who just looked pretty good in Denver in his debut. That helps. He didn't have that this year. And I thought all season long watching, I thought they made a deal with Kelly Bryant that if you come here, we're going to let you throw the ball. And we're gonna try to turn you into an NFL quarterback. And I have no problem with making that deal in recruiting. Recruiting is not about telling the truth. It's about telling kids what you have to tell them to get them on campus. And then when you get them on campus, sometimes you have to change. When you're trailing Vanderbilt 14-7 and you have a non-functional offense, if what you have to do is tell Kelly Bryant to run the ball 22 times in a row, then that's what you do. But Missouri never did that. He ran far less and far less effectively than he did at Clemson. And frankly, running is the only thing that made Kelly Bryant a difference maker at quarterback in college. Otherwise, he's kind of just a guy.
Gabe, I'm guessing that all parties are sort of evaluating right now the coaches that might have an interest. Missouri, as they look at coaches they may have an interest in. So let me ask the question. How good a job is the Missouri job?
It's decent. I think I went through this. I went through all the major conferences. I think it's like a top 25-30-ish job in the country. It may be a little lower than that, top 35-ish. There's some that obviously are better jobs. In the SEC, there are quite a few. But if you look at the ones that are open in the SEC right now, you've got Arkansas and Ole Miss. Now, both of those schools have a little bit more money, probably a lot more money. They have fan bases that I think have more of a reputation because, like, those are the pro teams in the state. One of the things that's always held
Mizzou back in Missouri is you've got the Cardinals and the Blues and the Chiefs and the Royals, and that diverts a lot of sports fan attention. You know, Missouri is, it's the only D1 school in the state, but it's not really like the state's team. The state's football team is the Chiefs. The state's sports team is the Cardinals. You know, so that's part of it. Now, one thing Missouri has, I think, over those two other schools, it's in the easier division right now. There's a more realistic path to a title game, and then, in essence, also to a playoff, theoretically, although I don't think that's super realistic for Missouri or 95% of the schools in the country. And the other thing is, this is not a situation where the coach got fired because they were just awful. Like, they had a disappointing year, but they were still 6-6, would have qualified for their third straight bowl game if the NCAA had let them. If you take a job at Arkansas, you're 3 years from 6-6. If you take the job at Ole Miss, you're 3 years from 8-4. If you take the job at Missouri, you look at what they have on hand, and if you're the right guy, you think you can finish third in the East next year without a whole lot of problem or stretching it. So I think it's a decent job. It's not a great one.
Gabe DeArmond is the publisher of PowerMizzou.com. He's on the line with us. Watson, you got some questions for him?
Gabe, as they now start hunting the next head coach, talk to us a little bit about philosophically what you think they should look for as far as their offense, defense. What would be the ground rules as you head out and start to look for a guy? What would you
right. The general rule is when you hire a coach, you hire the opposite of the guy you just let go, right? So Barry Odom was a defensive guy who hadn't been a head coach. So I think they are going to look for a guy who has head coaching experience and whose background is on the offensive side of the football. And now, I don't think defensive guys are automatically disqualified or anything like that. But, you know, I think they would prefer a guy who has been a head coach and who has an offensive background. I think that's number one. The reality is you're probably not hiring a sitting Power 5 coach at Missouri unless you just happen to find a guy like Arkansas did a few years ago with Brett Bielema, who's just not happy where he's at. And maybe you can poach that. But I think more realistically, you're looking at that, you know, at those group of five coaches and who's been good there, or maybe even below that. I mean, you know, one of the reasons we started talking and I'm on here is a Tennessee guy, Will Healy. I think he's on Missouri's list. You know, now he's a little bit of a different candidate. But he does fit those two qualifications of, hey, he's built a program, he's an offensive guy, and he's got a little bit of experience.
What other names are you hearing? I know I'm sure Norvell's is in it because it's everywhere.
Right? I was told day one, basically, that Norvell's not coming to Missouri. I think he's going to go to Florida State, if you want to be honest. I think he ends up getting that job. But he's not coming to Missouri. Brian Harsin, the Boise State coach, his name keeps coming up. A lot of people think he's holding out for a Pac-12 job before he leaves Boise, which I certainly could see. You know, Dan Hawkins got one. Well, I guess Dan Hawkins, Colorado, was still in the Big 12 technically, but Chris Peterson got the Washington job. That's a more natural fit for guys that leave Boise. Willie Fritz's name has come up. Kind of the normal, you know, I guess group of five guys, Blake Anderson's name has come up. You know, Jim McElwain seems to be a guy that's starting to come up because he's done well at Central Michigan.
And my last question, Gabe, would be, is there a quarterback in place that can turn
the offense? Well, it's pretty interesting. They actually have two quarterbacks who who is the quarterback next year might depend on the coach they hire and the system they run, because they got a transfer from TCU named Sean Robinson. He was an Army All-American in high school. He played a year and a half at TCU, got hurt, wasn't great, not super effective, but had a ton of potential coming out of high school. And I know people around the team really like him and really think he's got a chance to be good. He's more of a dual threat guy. And then they've got a true freshman named Connor Bazelak, who actually started the game against Arkansas last week. He had one drive against Georgia and looked pretty good. He started the game against Arkansas and looked pretty decent. I want to say it was early second quarter, he went on a run around the right side and tore his ACL. So spring football probably out for him, but he, I would assume, would be ready to go for fall camp. And so, again, just depending on who the coach is and what they want to run, I think they could look at either guy. And I think that's somewhat of a selling point for Missouri. Well, neither of those guys is proven on the field. I think they're both pretty well thought of, and that could be something that an offensive head coach says, hey, Sean Robinson, like, I can work with this. That might be a selling point for Missouri.
Okay.
I guess, you know, when you look at the season that Missouri had, they were 5-1 at one point. Was there one particular loss, maybe the loss to Vanderbilt, that kind of started the process, the train rolling in the wrong direction and leading to Barry Odom being dismissed? Or do you think it was kind of just an accumulation of how this team finished over the final 5 or 6 weeks?
I mean, it was an accumulation, but I think it's an easy argument to make that all Barry Odom would have had to do to say the job is beat Vanderbilt. I mean, if you do that, you're 7-5. You're not getting fired at Missouri for 7-5. And if you do that, maybe you don't fail to show up against Kentucky the next week, right? You probably still get beat by Georgia and Florida, but maybe you beat Tennessee. I mean, you know, momentum is a weird thing with college kids. And that Vanderbilt game, I still can't figure it out. I mean, Vanderbilt might have been worse than Arkansas this year. That was a terrible football team. And, I mean, leading into that week, even people that covered Vanderbilt said, I don't see any possible way, barring 7 turnovers or team-wide illness, that Missouri can lose this game. And then they did. And, frankly, Vanderbilt looked like the better team all day long. Nope, they didn't come close to beating anybody else, really, in the league. And they made Missouri look terrible. And I think there was a lot of Missouri just thought they could roll their helmets out and win that game. And then by the time they woke up and Kelly Bryant threw an interception in the end zone, it was too late. I think that rolled into Kentucky. Kentucky might have beaten them anyway, but that certainly didn't help. If you just changed the Vanderbilt game, we're not here talking about that.
One last thing for me. You talked about how, you know, Missouri has more competition, you know, for the sports attention and the sports dollar from the St. Louis Cardinals and the Kansas City Chiefs and the Royals and whatnot. In terms of Missouri now being part of the SEC for the last few years, how do you feel like the fan base has adjusted to that? Because it seems to me, you know, that the SEC is deep-rooted in traditional fan bases like Alabama and Auburn and Tennessee, yeah, and LSU and so on and so on, that, you know, they live for every Saturday in the fall. And you know, how are Missouri fans and the fan base, how are they adjusting to life in the SEC with all these other diehard schools?
Well, it was a big thing coming in, you know, and it was a big concern for Missouri. Just, it's never been a fan base that supports this place like a lot of those schools. Now, it's also pretty easy to explain. I mean, those schools, those are some of the best teams in the history of college football, right? So the more you win, the more it happens. But, you know, typical game day in Columbia, South Carolina, and that's a different experience than in Columbia, Missouri. And Missouri's every bit the program South Carolina is historically and really recently too. So they sold out the Ole Miss game this year. It's the first game they've sold out since 2015. It's a thing. They are they're down there 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th as far as donors, support, all that. You know, it's tough for Missouri. There's no question in this league. You knew it was going to be going in. The biggest problem for Missouri, Missouri has always been a fan base, and all fan bases are like this, but Missouri, I think, a little more so than some. They take great pride in being the show me state. And so they say, you show me a reason to show up and I'll show up. But they're not just going to show up just because their team's playing. If their team's playing and it's against a good team and their team's good and all that, yeah, absolutely. This place can get pretty fun and pretty wild on a Saturday. But it's not wild on Saturday for, you know, 2-5 Vanderbilt against 3-4 Missouri. It's never going to be. That's part of what makes this tough. This isn't Tennessee. And now, Tennessee's a weird example because there's a lot of empty seats there the last few years, too. But if Tennessee gets good, even when they're down, they have 78,000. Missouri's never had 78,000 in a football game in its history. You know, it's not Auburn. It's not between the hedges. And it never will be. So
you know, there are things Missouri has to overcome to compete in this league.
Hey, Gabe, leave me with this. Will Healy has an awful lot of friends in this area and was a terrific recruiter at Austin Peay. A lot of the success that they're having right now in the 1AA playoffs is because of him. How far do you think it's gone with him? Kind of run through all that a little bit.
Well, I've confirmed that Missouri has at least reached out to him. Whether they've talked to him, whether it's like an interview situation, I don't know that yet. I've had people tell me that they've met with him in person, but I can't, you know, I can't say for sure that's true at this point in time. He's an interesting name, man. I mean, I said going into this, if you're Missouri, you can't hire a coach who's already proven he's good at this level. What you have to do is find the guy you think is going to be good at this level, right? And so, honestly, with some of the names I know, the guy I'd try to hire is Brian Harsin from Boise State. If you can't hire him, the other names I know, I'd take the chance on Will Healy. It's different. You know, when the comparison I made on our message board, and I know you guys are familiar with him, and so I don't know if you'll agree with this or take offense or exception to this, I said he could be the next Lincoln Riley. He also could be the next, you know, like Ron Prince, a young guy who got a job at Kansas State and flamed out in 4 years. Because we don't know what he is at the Power 5 level, right? I mean, he has to go prove it before you know. But I'm at least intrigued, given Missouri's list as I know it. If I couldn't get Brian Harsin, I'd probably go hire Will Healy. Because the thing is, if you wait 2 years, well, then Will Healy's going to be on eight people's list. And Missouri can't get him at that point.
Yeah.
This is when you can get him. If you think he's the guy, then go get him.
Hey, thank you so much on very short notice for doing this. I really appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Have a good one.
Gabe DeArmon is the publisher of PowerMizzou.com, joining us here on the show. When we come back, we're going to lay out all the rumors that are out there right now on the college football front, or if not 100% of them, a lot of them. So stick around. You're going to want to hear this. Stay tuned. You're listening to WNSR.
Winter's coming.
Winter is coming.
Winter is coming.
Coming this Christmas, a man.
Hey, Bill King here.
His listeners.
Robin the 210.
And Biscuits.
I don't know if we realize how fortunate we are to have Music City Todd. That is a world-class facility.
Winter is coming.
Commitmas 2019. Wednesday, December 18th at Barline in the Omni Nashville Hotel. Fifth Avenue South, downtown Nashville.
We appreciate you. Appreciate WNSR.
Join the Bill King Show and celebrate National Signing Day.
Oh, my God. Bill King just read my tweet.
For more info and Commitmas gear, log on to WNSR.com and get your special Commitmas rate at the Omni Nashville Hotel. Commitmas 2019 from the Omni Nashville Hotel, the Bill King Show, and WNSR, Nashville Sports Radio.
Winter is coming.
Get ready to get your game on with the Tennessee Lottery and fill up your day with fun. Like when you need to upgrade the fun on that road trip. When you could use a little, did I just win $50 fun?
Woo, yeah!
Or when you like to add a side of fun to that next snack.
Wow, good.
Would you like some fun with that?
Oh, well, yeah.
Then play the Tennessee Lottery. And for just a dollar or two, you can get your game on. Please remember, play responsibly.
Happy holidays, honey.
Ooh, what is it?
Just open it.
Is it a holiday luck instant game?
I don't know.
It sounds like, is that a $20,000 holiday cheer game? Hold up, you didn't. No, do I hear a Merry Money and a holiday gifts instant game? All instant games.
Do you love it?
Best presents ever.
Make every gift a little brighter with holiday instant games only from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing holiday celebrating fun. Please play responsibly.
Lynch Tree Service has been helping Middle Tennesseans for more than 25 years. Whether you need tree pruning and maintenance, stump grinding, or even land clearing, Lynch Tree Service is here to help. Their number one priority is to provide customers with the best tree services possible at an extremely competitive competitive price. For more info, give them a call at 615-649-4584 or go online, lynchtreeserve@aol.com.
Ensworth is a kindergarten through 12th grade co-educational independent school located on two campuses in Nashville, Tennessee. The school incorporates a nurturing community with a challenging program to create a unique, joyful environment where students can develop the intellectual agility, self-confidence, and discipline they need to excel. Visit our website at ensworth.com to learn more.
Live from the Goggin Cold Hall Studios, it's the George Plaster Show on Nashville Sports Radio.
Okay, let's clean up a couple of things at 244. The interim head coach of the Carolina Panthers is former Vanderbilt assistant Perry Fuel. So, good for Perry Fuel. That's the way they've gone in the interim. They fired Ron Rivera earlier today, ninth season, reached the Super Bowl several years ago, but did not win in Peyton Manning's final game in Denver. Terry, get ready to kick back and enjoy all these college football rumors we're about to put out there.
There's a bunch of them.
Yeah. So, Watson, see if, first of all, let's start with Rutgers today, which did what we knew eventually they were going to have to do, and that's give in to a lot of what Greg Schiano wanted to bring him back. Watson, to me, this is a no-brainer because he's the only person that's ever made it work there.
Yeah, they had to, in my opinion. I think the fan base would have killed them if they didn't go in all out to try to bring Greg back. And it fits Greg because he won there. And he's been other places and he wasn't successful. So I think this is a good move for both. And I would bet you he'll get them back up there competitive again in the conference. I believe he will.
So, Watson, you kind of believe that the dominoes will start falling after Memphis's after their championship game on Saturday against Cincinnati, and the belief is that Mike Norvell is going to Florida State.
That's what, again, all I can do is through coaching profession and other things, through media, everything that I can get my hands on, I think that Mike Norvell will go to Florida State. I think that's what he's wanted. I really think they went after James Franklin first. At Penn State, it didn't get worked out, and I think Norvell was their second guy, and I think he's excited about going. I will be shocked if that's not where he lands.
Yeah.
And he's the top name. You've probably got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There's probably 10 names right now. You know how this crazy business is. And there's probably 10 names in those group of five schools. And that's where most of the head coaches in the FBS, unless it's the Ohio States and the Southern Cals, that they'll get an FBS guy. Most of these people, George, hire from the – they either take coordinators in the FBS or they go and get a head coach in one of the group of five schools. That's kind of been the MO here the last 5 years, I'd say.
So if Norvell bolts Memphis, that means Memphis has a coaching opening. And the belief is that Barry Odom, who got fired at Missouri, whether he gets the job or not, he's going to be very close because he was very popular there as defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I think that would be – I would be surprised if they do that. Memphis has had success with two – they've hired two coordinators, Justin Fuente and Mike Norvell, and they were both highly successful, good offensive coaches. Really would surprise me if Memphis went the defensive way after being successful with two younger offensive gurus, as they like to call them and always have called them. I never have understood that. But that's what I just can't see them going for a guy that just got let go in the Southeastern Conference, and he's a defensive guy, even though he's got a lot of friends and well thought of in Memphis. He was with Justin Fuente. So now the one way that Barry might get, Coach Odom might get away with it, George, is to have that name offensive guy that he knows that he can bring with him, that he could sell the Memphis people on that.
Terry.
Yes.
Guess who the hot rumor is at Arkansas?
Your buddy Lane Kiffin.
Well, it's funny. The athletic director at Arkansas is a former Vandy marketing and promotions guy, Hunter Yurachek, who worked his way up the system, was the athletic director at the University of Houston when Tom Herman left there. He got the Arkansas job, and now all of a sudden the scrutiny is on him. Now, I have to laugh about this. FootballScoop.com reported last week that FAU head coach Lane Kiffin had been, quote, vetted by Florida State. Vetted. What does that mean? Vetted.
Means they checked him out to make sure he didn't have any felonies on his record, I guess. Right.
Wonder how far that vet went.
God. 48 hours. I mean, did they vet the fact that the people on his staff were using Tennessee cell phones at the end to call recruits and tell them, don't come here, we're going to USC. By the way, the one doing that is now the head coach at LSU. Yeah.
That will make the LSU-Arkansas game very interesting to watch, at least.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? Okay, so we believe.
That wouldn't be fun to watch it, period. I'm telling you.
So
be over in the first quarter.
Yeah, really. So we believe right now that Lane Kiffin is the leader in the clubhouse at Arkansas.
I agree. I wait to believe that when it happens. if they just go ahead and do that. But I thought he was kind of two to Mike Norvell, and I don't think he will be there because I think he'll take off to Florida State. So that would put him in the lead. Now they're playing in, just like Memphis, they're playing in the championship game this weekend in Conference USA. Against UAB, so watch it close right after that's over.
Here is a great quote that has come out, you know, in all this coaching stuff. So apparently Joe Moorhead, the coach at Mississippi State, sort of pulled a little bit of a Derek Mason when asked, how do you feel about your job security? He said, this is my school. This is my team. This is my program. If you want to ask, I'm not interested in anybody's validation, but the people in that locker room. Every single one of them, if you ask who's the right man for this job, they'll tell you it's me. I promise you that. I'm here. This is my team, my school, my program. You'll have to drag my Yankee ass out of here. Really? Okay, Watson, so now let's go to Ole Miss, where P-Gate appeared to be the final straw for Matt Luke.
Oh, I'm afraid you're right, George. I truly believe that was the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
I think he was on shaky grounds, but I just bet you if they go ahead and win that game, he gets another year. And losing the game, and then losing it the way they did with just an ugly incident. And it's, my gracious, it's their best receiver that does this. And then cost his team because of the 15-yard penalty. A lot of times these things happen. We talked about the Jennings incident in the Vanderbilt game. It was ugly, but it didn't cost the team anything. This cost the team the game.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was the crowning blow that finally did it.
So there are a lot of us in this area very interested because a friend of ours, Mike McIntyre, has been named the interim head coach and defensive coordinator. I certainly do not think he's the leader in the clubhouse, Watson, what names are you gathering on this one?
I think that the kind of the hot names, George, throughout, the two I hear at Ole Miss right now are Billy Napier, who's at Lafayette, was coached with Dabo Swinney, coached with Nick Saban at Alabama, receiver coach at Alabama during their championship times. He's done really well at Lafayette. He's won championship playing, I think, again this year in the Sun Belt Championship. So I hear his name. I hear Bill Clark's name, the head coach at UAB. They're probably the two I hear right now the most at Ole Miss. But I wouldn't count Mike out, George. He is very good friends with Carter, the AD, from the original time he was at Ole Miss as an assistant. And they stayed good friends. So now, I don't think that's what they want to do. I think they've talked national. I love it when people say that. What does that mean anyway?
It means we're going to get on a plane.
I mean, it's national and you hire a guy from Memphis. So
this is a regional search.
Miles up the road.
Yes.
I mean, I never understood what that meant. But I hear those names. The hot names, George, the hot names that are out there right now. The guy at App State, even though he's 1 year, Drinkwitz.
Eli Drinkwitz.
Really good year at App State, and they're in the top 20. You hear that name even after 1 year, you hear it. Will Healy's name's been around. It has. And, again, 1 year at Charlotte. So I've done that. You got to be careful when you jump quick. And
right.
Did it. And you know, you're only really hot for a short, you know, you hit your little hot time as a coach, and you got to be very careful on what you do with that. Billy Napier, Bill Clark at UAB. I think Bill will get looks. This is his second go-around. Luke Fickell.
Yeah, head coach at Cincinnati.
I think that he would be more of a northern guy. He may be one Boston College is looking at. Because I don't think Luke has ever been in the South, so he might be a little more regional that way. Brian Harsin at Boise State, again, I think more west with him. About as far east as you'd go would be Missouri, I would say. You know who I heard this morning at South Florida? This will shock you.
Willie Taggart.
Yes.
Well, now think about it.
Bring
because
him back. Isn't that interesting?
Well, he had success there.
He did. Big success. Did well.
And so they don't have the scars that some of these other schools, well, that Florida State has when it comes to Willie Taggart.
Yeah, and Willie was only unsuccessful at Florida State. He did well at Oregon, and he did very well at Western Kentucky. So, and, of course, he did well at South Florida. So he's done well at other places. So, when you first hear it, you say, woo. And then when you think it out, I mean, it's Greg Schiano. That's what they're doing. It's Mack Brown. It's what North Carolina did. They brought him back. The other names, of course, Mike Norvell is probably the hottest one. Willie Fitz at Tulane has done really well here. I hear his name. I'm telling you.
Yep.
Don't count him out at Missouri. I don't know what the connection is, but I think there's something to that one. And then, of course, Lane Kiffin would be the other one that was on my list. And so these are the names. You just watch here in the next month. These are the names that they're going to pick from if they don't go for coordinators in the FBS.
Here is one deal that we have not brought up that ultimately would open up another round of dominoes. I now am of the opinion, Terry, that USC is not going to fire Clay Helton, but is going to retain him. The athletic director is Mike Bone, who came from Cincinnati. He's only been on the job a few weeks. And as I look at it, Clay Helton has said all the right things and done all the right things in recent weeks. I kind of think he's going to get retained.
Yeah, I mean, there was a report that came out on Sunday, actually, that he had been fired, and that was nixed. And now, you know, I think people are saying that he may wind up sticking around and getting another year because, you know, when you look at what happened at Southern Cal, didn't they lose their quarterback pretty early on in the season, I think? You know,
he did a pretty good job of keeping things together and getting them to 7 or 8 wins, whatever it is that they have. You know, I think, you know, granted, when you compare that to Pete Carroll or going way back to John McKay or John Robinson, it pales in comparison. But I think, you know, with USC having been down for the last 2 or 3 years, I think they should give Clay Helton another shot and see if he can bring it back up.
Okay, last one. UNLV is open. I believe that's down to either Jimmy the Greek or Brent Musburger.
Jerry,
I'll quickly say here, quick as we're going off, I think Southern Cal was waiting on Urban Meyer, possibly James Franklin.
Yeah.
They couldn't get to those. They were going to keep Clay Helton. That's what I think has gone down.
Chris Lee from Vandy Sports to talk to start the 3 o'clock hour, and then we'll be looking for your phone calls.